In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade for McCullough, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Real name, no gimmicks.
That's why I ain't got no.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM, 750 AM. We spent last segment talking about the Utah Utes, and they wrapped up the regular season here on Saturday here on KOAL with a 27-22 loss. We don't need to go down that avenue again. We don't need to pull that back out for you Ute fans. However, the Pac-12 championship is set, and it doesn't feature Utah, and it doesn't feature USC, and it doesn't even feature UCLA. Those were the three teams at the beginning of the season that I thought definitely had the best chance to make a push for that Pac-12 South. It does feature Colorado going up against Washington. And joining us to talk about that and some of the other storylines around the college football ranks, we'll bring in our good friend Steve Bordstein. He's the host of First Sports in Farmington, New Mexico on Fox Sports 1340. Steve, as always, it's a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
I appreciate you having me on. Thanks a lot.
You and I talked some college football on your show earlier today, and now you're returning the favor. Look, I'm blown away by the Pac-12 championship matchup. Even Washington, at the beginning of the season, I know they became that lovable underdog. You know, Chris Peterson's group, they could put up a lot of points. They creeped into the top 10. Then they just blasted Stanford. And I think that's when people really started taking note of Washington. They're at 11-1 right now. If they win the Pac-12 championship, there's no reason why they shouldn't be in the Final Four come playoff time. This is a very interesting game. So you have Washington and Colorado. I really don't know what direction this game is going to go. I do believe, however, it probably favors Washington nonetheless.
I think it favors Washington, and no disrespect to the Buffaloes, because I didn't see it coming. I did not see this year coming for Colorado, but they snuck up on everyone, you know, and they took advantage of, you mentioned it, a UCLA team that was decimated by injuries. They took advantage of a USC team that, you know, started off slow, obviously, the 1-3 start that, you know, now looks like a million miles ago in the rearview mirror with their 8-game win streak, but they took advantage of those situations, and good for Colorado. That's half the battle of being a good college football team, is taking advantage of situations. But I just can't. I watched that Colorado-Utah game Saturday night, and for the life of me, Colorado had a million opportunities to kind of put that game away and just couldn't do it. And it was frustrating to watch that game against a Utah team that was trying to hand them the game, for crying out loud. So I think Washington wins, and I think Washington wins just simply because of Jake Browning and the weapons that he has at his disposal. Whether it's, you know, Dante Pettis, who caught three catches for 86 yards the other night against Washington State. I mean, you look at the receiving yards that they put up in that game against Washington State. They had five receivers with more than 20 yards, per catch in the game, for crying out loud. They can go a lot of different directions. Chico McClatcher, John Ross, Drew Samples, a pretty talented guy. They can bring him in off the bench. They've got so many different weapons. And then they've got this running game where it's kind of a running back by committee with LaVon Coleman. Miles Gaskin had a good game the other night. So I think they just do too many things too well, to put themselves over the top in the Pac-12 championship game. Is that enough then, you know, with all the other games going on, to vault them into the college football playoff? Obviously, that's going to be up to the committee. I hope it does, for other reasons we'll get into in a moment. But I just think Washington just has too many weapons on the table.
I want to stick with the Pac-12 here for just a moment. You mentioned the dreadful Utah-Colorado game, and I want to tell those who listened to it here on KOAL, it was much more entertaining to listen to it than it was to watch it, because it was a very poorly played game. I thought the Utes were terrible in this contest, specifically Troy Williams. But one thing that has plagued the Utes over the last couple of seasons, you know what, we can go back 5 years. Since the Utes have joined the Pac-12, one of the things that has plagued this team is their inability to score points. Defensively, I think they're very sound. They have somebody like Hunter Dimmick, who I think is going to be, he's going to get selected in the first two or three rounds in the NFL draft. They have talent defensively. But Steve, I want your assessment of head coach Kyle Whittingham, who I love, and Coach Whit takes out the time to join us here on the show regularly. So we love Coach Whittingham. But it seems like I don't know what word I'm trying to find here. He hasn't necessarily improved this team offensively over the past five seasons. And really, with Troy Williams coming back next year, I know they have Tyler Huntley, who I've seen a lot of great things out of as a freshman quarterback. But what is the problem with Utah's offense in your mind?
I think the fact that they don't know their identity. Like you mentioned Troy Williams in the game he had the other night against Colorado. What was he, 13 for 40?
Yes.
For 160 yards, which is an average of, what, like 4 yards per completion, which is terrible. You know, the problem that I think you have with Utah as far as their offense is concerned is I don't think they nearly took advantage enough of Joe Williams. Whether it was this game here against Colorado, I think Joe Williams is a talented running back. I think he needed to be a more focal point in that offense. My problem with Utah has always been since their introduction to the Pac-12, Pac-10 back in the day, is they haven't stepped up recruiting wise. And I don't know if it's because Kyle Whittingham isn't a great recruiter. I don't know if they can compete on the same scale as other schools in the Pac-12 conference right now, because it doesn't seem like they're getting those recruits. I get it. Utah's not a marquee name yet. They're not there yet. Maybe they will get there. But to me, you mentioned the motivation factor, you know, for Kyle Whittingham, and I just don't think that it's there yet. I think it's a tough sell, and it's that way with schools that are new to conferences. It's that way when your name isn't affiliated automatically with that conference, whether it be the Pac-12, whether it be the Big Ten, what have you. It takes a while to get in there. Colorado did it. I mean, Colorado completely, you know, once they got into the Pac-12 conference, look at them now. They're playing for the championship. I think it does have a lot to do with motivating. I think it has a lot to do with recruiting. So that's my major issue with Utah going forward here, is that they've got to be able to take that next step forward, and I don't know if they're going to be able to do it.
Is Kyle Whittingham the guy moving forward in your mind?
No. He's not. And that's not a slight on him, but there are certain guys who are just not cut out for that level. And I hate to use the comparison, but it's a valid one now. Charlie Strong. I'm sorry, but that's who he is. Charlie Strong was handed a golden ticket, if you will, at Texas, but he's not Texas ready. We refer to it as Saturday Night Live. In the original years of Saturday Night Live, there are certain people that are just not ready for primetime players. And Kyle Whittingham, to me, is that guy. It's not a slight on him. He's a solid, smart, thinking head coach, but I just don't think he's got that ability. You know, Mike Leach was a great example of a guy who came into a new conference, but he knew how to recruit. He came from Texas Tech, so he knew how to recruit, so that works for him. These guys that come out of big conferences are successful programs. They can go into these big programs and these big conferences and not be intimidated. And I'm not saying that Kyle Whittingham's a bad coach. I want to make sure that that's very clear. He's not a bad coach. I just don't think he's the right guy. If you want this program to be in that elite area, I don't think he's the guy going forward.
Starting to see some sort of, I guess you could say, common ground between Kyle Whittingham and the, I know it was a negative phrase or a negative term used towards Steve Sarkisian, 8-win Sark. It's starting to become the same thing with Kyle Whittingham, right? 8-9 wins.
Yeah, and that's great if that's what Utah's content with. If Utah's content with being an 8-9 win team that's going to play in a minor bowl game every year, then great. Then Kyle Whittingham is your guy going forward. If you've got aspirations, though, of being Colorado, if you've got aspirations of being Washington, if you've got aspirations of being USC, because here's the newsflash. For all the stuff that happened to USC at the beginning of this season, they went out, if they win the Rose Bowl or whatever game they wind up in, they're a top-5 team next year. The first rankings. They're going to be a top-5 team along with the national champion and the runner-up. So if you have those aspirations, then you have to be able to step up in these situations. The fact that Utah, in their last couple of games, you know, they just didn't step up here. They didn't step up against Oregon, and they didn't step up against Colorado. You can argue the game, they lost 3 of their last 4. That's not, if you want to be that elite team, you can't lose 3 of your last 4 games.
Again, our guest right now with Steve Bordstein, host of First Sports on 1340 AM in Farmington, New Mexico, Fox Sports. We'll talk about that in just a bit. Hey, you mentioned the Rose Bowl, Steve, and we'll get to that in just a second. Obviously, there's a direct correlation between the Big Ten and the Pac-12. In your mind, who deserves more credit and who would you give your nod to for Coach of the Year? James Franklin and the mess that he turned around in Penn State for a team that's now 10-2. They beat Ohio State and they'll be playing for the Big Ten Championship. Or Mike McIntyre at Colorado, because again, there's another program that was in shambles and they're also 10-2 and they're ranked 8th and 9th in the rankings. And there's a realistic chance that we could get Colorado and Penn State in the Rose Bowl. Nobody in their wildest dreams could have predicted that at the beginning of the season.
No, you're absolutely right. And as far as the Coach of the Year is concerned, boy, you'd be hard-pressed to tell me, you know, a couple of years ago, here's where Penn State's going to be after all the mess that that program and that university went through. So I would give the nod, and it's no disrespect again to Mike McIntyre, but I would give the nod to James Franklin because, and let's be honest here, who, you know, the guy who looked bad in all of this is Bill O'Brien, because he couldn't wait to get out of there. After he was hired, after the Paterno scandal and everything went bad there, when they brought in Bill O'Brien, it was seen like a mercy hire almost. Okay, I'll come in, I'll take care of this for a couple of years. He couldn't wait to get out of there. Imagine where they'd be if Bill O'Brien had stuck around. So you bring in James Franklin. I'm not saying that Bill O'Brien didn't get a great opportunity, you know, to run an offense in the NFL. Good for him, and he's done a good job. But and James Franklin came into a situation where at that time the sanctions had not yet been lifted, and suddenly all of a sudden the doors open up here, and now he's got the sanctions have been lifted, all is forgiven, and here comes Penn State playing out of their minds right now. And Colorado, again, Colorado's done very, very well, but I think if you're looking at Coach of the Year, I think the situation at Penn State, given the timing, given where they were, where you see them now, that's an incredible turnaround.
It really is. This was a program that was nearly faced with the death penalty. I mean, we haven't seen sanctions like that since SMU.
Right, and the fact that this and the fact that James Franklin took that job, not knowing that that was going to happen, not knowing that the Red Sea was going to part, essentially, you know, as far as the sanctions were concerned, they were going to be lifted, and suddenly James Franklin didn't have to deal with all the recruiting sanctions. He didn't have to deal with the postseason sanctions. Suddenly, he could recruit like a regular coach. He could recruit like a Division I Power 5 conference dominant team head coach, which Penn State hadn't been in almost a decade. So the fact that he was able to do that and get that kind of turnaround there is pretty impressive.
So we get Penn State and Wisconsin. The winner of that game will go to the Rose Bowl unless something happens and they get catapulted into the top four. I think if Wisconsin wins, it's pretty clear cut and dry. They're going to go to the Rose Bowl and Ohio State will end up top four. If Penn State gets a win, does Franklin's squad have a legitimate gripe knowing that they beat Ohio State, they won the Big Ten championship, they are ranked in the top 10? Do they have a legitimate case to be made to get into the Final Four?
Into the Final Four? No. I don't think Penn State has a gripe if they go out and win this weekend. Do they have a gripe to be in the Final Four? No, I don't think so. I still think that, you know, going to the Rose Bowl is a great thing for them. But and you and I talked about this a little bit on my show this morning, and I understand the sentiment. How can you reward a team that didn't win its conference championship? I get all that. I don't think they can make a gripe though. It's still a two-loss team in Penn State, and I think as long as we're going to be penalizing two-loss teams here, then Penn State unfortunately can't argue that they should be in the Final Four now.
So let me toss another scenario out there for you. Say Washington loses to Colorado, and I think you and I agree that's a long shot. I don't think it's going to happen. That means that a two-loss team would get into the Final Four. In some capacity, it would have to happen because you only would have Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama with one or less losses, because Washington would have two, Michigan would have two, Wisconsin would have two, Oklahoma would have two. If Washington loses and Penn State wins the Big Ten championship, then would you put two Big Ten squads in, and would you give Penn State the nod over Michigan?
I would argue yes, only if, and this goes again against the logic of the Power Five conferences. How big does Oklahoma beat Oklahoma State by?
Okay.
Because I, Because again, two lost team. There's your other two lost team there. I would argue then the case of it's Oklahoma and Penn State. Then you have that argument to throw in there. I think Michigan has invalidated themselves. I think Michigan's out of the equation entirely. Michigan losing to Ohio State. I get it was a close game. I get it was a classic. They've taken themselves out of that equation right now. So I think it comes down to, you know, the Wisconsin, Penn State, or Oklahoma argument as far as who gets that fourth spot. I'd have no issue if that were to be the case. I'd have no issue with that if it was Oklahoma, Wisconsin, or Penn State, if Washington loses to Colorado. Colorado can't be in the Final Four. I mean, I'm sorry, but that would eliminate the Pac-12 conference from being in the Final Four. That's too bad. But Colorado can't get there when they lost earlier in the season to a USC team that honestly I think is better than them.
Well, I got to point this out. If Washington does lose and two Big Ten teams get in, we're leaving out two conference champions from a Power Five, and that is a huge problem with the playoff committee. Huge problem based on what they have said in the past fits the criteria to get into the Final Four.
And it does open up. It'll open up the floodgates for all the arguments about it needs to be an 18 playoff. And I am so resistant to that. I understand that it's a popular sentiment and everyone wants to see the 8 teams. But then here's the next problem: is that it's going to be 8 teams isn't enough. Well, the team number 9, they got screwed out of this. But you know what? No one's ever going to be happy with this.
Right.
And the people who are happy about it are people like you and I, because we get to stir up that controversy. We get to stir up the pot a little bit. I like the idea that there are teams that are going to get left out. Teams get left out every year. Teams get left out of the March Madness. Teams get left out of this. Teams get left out of that. You know what? It makes for great story time. It makes for great fodder. And it makes you have to play harder next year. It makes you have to recruit harder next year. Not everyone should be able to compete for a championship.
No, I agree with you. And the old saying that people, this is why people wanted a playoff. Let's let the teams decide it on the field. And this is what I tried to say at that particular time. Guess what? It's not being decided on the field, because when Clemson and Louisville had the same record, there were people actually saying that Louisville deserved to be there over Clemson, despite the fact that Clemson beat them and they had the same record. If Penn State does not get in and Ohio State does, guess what? It wasn't decided on the field because Penn State won the conference championship. You're always going to have these loopholes, Steve, always.
Yeah, there's always going to be that argument. And I always, and you know, and let's face it, we do that for a living. We talk about these things so we can get the fans fired up. We can get, you know, the boosters fired up a little bit. And that's great. That's what's great about what we do. That's what's great about Tuesday when the rankings come out and everything, and everyone gets all the flutter, and then they, you know, during the basketball season, it's the RPIs and all that nonsense, and everyone gets all fired up for it. And I love that stuff. But at some point in time, and to your point about things are decided on the field, things are decided long before the College Football Playoff Committee gets around. Things are decided when the schedules are drawn up. Things get decided when schools decide who they want to play 3 years, 4 years in advance. Those things are decided long before these things ever get on the field.
Steve Bordstein, host of First Sports on Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. Steve, let the listeners know how they can listen to the show.
You can find it online through your iHeartRadio app. Just download the app. You can go to our website to do that at foxsports1340.com. I host First Sports Monday through Fridays, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. That's 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time. You can catch it online through our website at foxsports1340.com. On Saturdays and Sundays, I host a horse racing show called The Fast Track. That's on from 8 to 9 a.m. Mountain Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern. You can also catch that online through our website at foxsports1340.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at fox1340am. Again, we're on there every day on the radio station, just like you, 7 days a week. It's a lot of fun. We do a great great little show out here with a lot of national and regional guests, and we'll be talking a lot about these college football playoff matchups over these next several days. Definitely looking forward to it. We're a Denver Broncos affiliate, so we get a lot of Broncos fans to chime in and call in. They're not very happy this afternoon, obviously, but it's a fun show. We enjoy doing it.
Steve, if you're Gary Kubiak, do you kick a 62-yarder to win the game last night?
Nope. Okay. I don't know if it was more of an indictment of his defense or if it was just more a case of we don't want to. I don't know what was his thought process at that moment. Just punt the ball, take the tie. I mean, take the tie because you pin them back to the 20-yard line. They're not going to go 50 yards in a minute. Instead, you had them go 20 yards. To me, it was an absolutely atrocious call. But they lost that game in the fourth quarter when they couldn't stop committing stupid defensive penalties,
right,
which elongated that drive in the fourth quarter that allowed them to score the game-tying touchdown, which sent it in overtime. I have no idea how that defense just suddenly became idiotic in the last part of that fourth quarter last night.
Steve, it's always great to get you on the show. I appreciate the time. We'll do it again soon.
Looking forward to it, my friend. Thank you.
Steve Bordstein, again of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico, taking out the time to join us here on Drive Time Sports. We are out of time of the show today. It was a fun, packed show. We'll be back at it tomorrow, same time, same place, beginning at 4 p.m. Have a very safe Monday. We will catch you tomorrow. Until then, I am out.